This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for this, the second hour of our afternoon broadcast here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. An important programming note, and that is in just about 1 hour, our own Maggie Dawn there on the campus of the state capitol in our state capitol in Madison, Wisconsin, going to be serving as the MC for a March for Democracy, bringing together many groups there to talk about the future of our nation, of our state, of our communities. Maggie Dawn is going to be organizing those presentations, those words spoken in support of the future of our republic, all walks of life, people of all immutable characteristics coming together to talk about the future of our state, of our nation, of our world, as we together work toward a better place of unity, advocacy for the things that have animated our nation for almost 240 years. Maggie Dawn, in about 1 hour, on the Capitol grounds there in Madison, Wisconsin, serving as the MC for that all-important program. If you are in the area, or even if you're not, you've got an hour to get there. Be a part of that important discussion there on the grounds of our Wisconsin State Capitol. My name is Jim Santel. Delighted to have you with me in this second hour of the Maggie Dawn Show. As we continue to talk about this major news event of just today, the nominee for the presidency by the Democratic Party announcing that Governor Tim Walz of the state of Minnesota is going to be her selection, is her selection for the vice presidential spot on her ticket. It'll be the Harris-Walz ticket going forward. And yes, indeed, that campaign is going to be here in Wisconsin tomorrow afternoon, almost exactly at the same time period in Eau Claire. And the broadcast stations of Civic Media are going to be covering it. I'm going to be here again in the Maggie Dawn Show segment, talking about what's going on not only in our world, but in our nation, and certainly here in the state of Wisconsin. Our coverage of the campaign, the Harris-Walz campaign, is going to be complete here at the broadcast stations of Civic Media, but also talking about the implications of this major announcement today and in the days ahead, describing this afternoon in the Maggie Dawn Show what we know about Tim Walz as he goes forward in this campaign, beginning for him just today. Talked a lot about his educational background, also, of course, his military background that animated much of his life, not only in Nebraska, but also in Minnesota. And, of course, that includes 20 years as a public school teacher. He voted in favor of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. He pointed to its strong provisions in support of public school buildings. Believe that the infrastructure was a very important part of education itself. He's on record supporting legislation to lower tuition costs. In a February 12, 2009 speech, he described his commitment to education this way. He said, "The most important thing to do is to ensure a solid base for America's economic future. And we do that," he said, "by providing the best education possible for our American children." He has received strong backing for all of his policies as governor and prior to that while he was a member of Congress from a number of different interest groups like the National Education Association, the NEA, the American Association of University Women, and yes, the National Association of Elementary School Principals, all of them advocating for the things that Tim Walz is all about, that he is advocating now as the governor of the state of Minnesota, but also now as the nominee for the vice presidency on the Democratic ticket. What about guns? What about firearms? Well, it is a part of his history that while he was in Congress, initially, Tim Walz was a strong supporter of gun rights. He was endorsed by the NRA Political Victory Fund multiple times, and he received a grade A from that organization until the Parkland High School shooting. 2018, remember that well. And after that event, something cathartic in his own political thinking, his own views about guns in America, he denounced the NRA in a fairly famous opinion piece in the Star Tribune there in Minneapolis. And he said that he would give the equivalent of all the campaign contributions that he had given to the NRA, that had been given to him by the NRA, about $18,000, to a group called the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund. And as governor, Tim Walz has also consistently now expressed support for gun regulation. He has invoked the very things we've talked a lot about here in the broadcast stations when it comes to what the Supreme Court has told us are indeed permissible, constitutional, legal, lawful restrictions, conditions on the manufacture, the sale, the transfer of firearms in America, including right here in the state of Wisconsin, in the state of Minnesota as well. Those include things like background checks. Our federal Congress has yet to do something in that area, but in fact, Tim Walz in 2023 signed into law in Minnesota a public safety bill that established universal background checks, ensuring that everyone who buys a gun in the state of Minnesota has a check through this process that has long been in place that assures that you are entitled to lawfully carry, use a weapon. And the notion that background checks are not universal in many states, including the state of Wisconsin, is a source of great concern, not only for the safety and security of all of us, but also for basic understandings about how guns are used, are transferred, are sold, and are a part of our nation. He also talked and advocated successfully for something else. Sometimes called red flag laws, an expression I don't particularly care for because it tends to suggest that this is something unusual or problematic. In fact, these are laws that enable individuals who see another person in their family, in their extended family, who may be at risk of harm to themselves or to other people. You can go to a court and present evidence and present to that judge evidence that this particular person is a threat to themselves or to some other person, and get the judge temporarily, not permanently, temporarily to remove that firearm from that person who might otherwise pose a threat of violence to themselves or other people, sometimes called red flag laws, again, most often called things like lethal violence protection orders. The legislation that Tim Walz advocated for as a part of his advocacy for sensible, reasonable gun legislation in America and in Minnesota, that was a part of that public safety bill that he signed into law in 2023 as a part of his understanding of guns in America and the things that we can do under the Constitution, under the Second Amendment to keep us all safe and secure. That's Tim Walz as well as governor of the state of Minnesota. What about LGBT rights? He supports LGBTQIA rights, including a federal anti-discrimination law on the basis of sexual orientation. We know that. He has talked about that a lot. 2009, he called for an end to the don't ask, don't tell policy, which of course eventually was removed from our federal status and our federal application across the board. He voted in favor of the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Hate Crimes Prevention Act, signed by President Barack Obama in 2009. Remember that well. I was the U.S. attorney at that time and can testify to the things that accomplished on behalf of our LGBTQIA populations throughout the nation, including in Wisconsin and in the state of Minnesota as well. Is also a big advocate for the Sexual Orientation Employment Non-Discrimination Act. 2007, he received a 90% grade from the Human Rights Campaign, which is, of course, the nation's largest LGBT rights organization. In 2011, he announced his support for the Respect for Marriage Act. And as governor, he signed a number of bills that support the LGBTQIA community. 2003, he signed a bill that banned the practice of conversion therapies in Minnesota, and another protected gender-affirming care in the state of Minnesota. All of those kinds of things to promote the status among all of us of the LGBTQIA rights and prerogatives under the law that should be a part of every state's system of laws and ways of engaging and including the LGBT community in all things of our lives, in commerce, in education, in social engagement, in the arts. Tim Walz plainly advocating for that across the board. All of that a part of Tim Walz's history recently and in the past. Of course, Tim Walz serving 24 years in the Army National Guard, beginning way back when he was very, very young, needless to say, a big part of his life, and continues to advocate for veterans' rights going back to his time in Congress, continuing during his time as the governor of the state of Minnesota. He has championed enhanced veterans' benefits since taking office
in way back in 2007. In May of that year, for example, the House unanimously passed the Traumatic Brain Injuries Center Act. That was a law, piece of legislation to set up 5 centers around our country to study traumatic brain injuries and develop improved methods for caring for veterans suffering from those kinds of injuries. He has also expressed, of course, support for the GI Bill of 2008, which his father very famously took advantage of, expanding education benefits for veterans, in some cases allowing them to transfer education benefits to family members as well. 2009, Walz gave a keynote address to the American Legion National Convention in Louisville. And he spoke at that time, as he's spoken in other settings, about the need for the Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense, to work together to make certain that returning servicemen coming from our wars overseas, our engagements overseas, do not fall, as he said, through the cracks when they transition back into civilian life. That also a part of Tim Walz's commission and his legacy coming out of the Congress and coming out of his present term as governor. He was the lead House sponsor of the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention for American Veterans Act, and that was a piece of legislation that directed the Veterans Administration to report on veterans' mental health care across our country, suicide issues, suicide prevention programs as well. Gives the VA permission to provide incentives to psychiatrists who agree to join the VA medical system. All those things in support of veterans in America. He advocates strongly as well for abortion rights, for women's rights, a 100% rating from Planned Parenthood. The National Right to Life Committee gave him a rating of 0, not surprisingly. In early 2009, he voted for the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. Again, all those things as a part of the issues important to women and men both in America, in Minnesota, and of course in Wisconsin as well. A strong advocate for abortion rights as we go forward in this campaign of 2024. When we come back, a little bit more about Tim Walz and then some other major news of these days here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Sitting in today for Maggie Dawn, who is in our state's capital, on the campus of our state capital, a March for Democracy. Maggie serving as the lead on that, as the MC for a number of groups, important speakers, pertinent advocacy about the future of our nation, our state, our communities. Be a part of that. Be a part of that if you can. Know as well that tomorrow afternoon, in approximately this time setting, the broadcast stations of Civic Media will be covering the presence of the Harris-Walz campaign right here in the state of Wisconsin in Eau Claire. Going to be covering that on behalf of all of our listeners, but also on behalf of all the people of the United States of America as we follow this campaign now underway, heading for a vote on November 5th of 2024. The next president of the United States of America and the next vice president of the United States of America today identified on the Democratic ticket as Tim Walz. Tim Walz, as we are indicating here this afternoon on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, this is the Maggie Dawn Show, born November 22nd of 1964. Tim Walz, governor of the state of Minnesota, former congressman, and also a former educator, animated his life in a major way, a former member of our United States military, part of agriculture, part of the economics of Minnesota, of our Midwest area, of the nation itself, focusing on those things that are important to Minnesotans, but also to all of us here in the state of Wisconsin, to people throughout the United States of America. Tim Walz, a nominee as of this morning, for the vice presidency of the United States of America.
Jim, I'm being told that if you are looking for yard signs, You can expect them around September, early September. Now that they have just officially announced it, I know people want yard signs. They're coming out in about a couple weeks now.
A couple weeks, and that's not too far away, Brian. That's a great thing to be thinking about. Right now, we can plainly get those Harris Lawn signs, but the printers are busy right now, is what you're telling me, Brian, right?
Oh, yeah, they're ready to go with like right. two different or three different right. things. But we had Matt Moreno, the head of the Wisconsin Dems, in earlier this week. And he was talking about yard signs, and people were asking for them, and they're not going to be out until September at least.
All right, but even so, I suspect, Brian, without too much violation of any election laws, you can make your own signs if you want to, right?
I think you probably could.
Get out those magic markers, those Sharpies, as that's old school, I know.
But, I know that the Trump people have.
Right, exactly. That has happened. And maybe we just use some other mechanisms, but we get those signs out there, whether they're officially printed or doing your own. All of that's going to be a part of the landscape here in Wisconsin, certainly in Minnesota, certainly in every state of the union, every territory, as this campaign goes ahead. And once again, tomorrow afternoon, right here in the state of Wisconsin, the campaign comes to Eau Claire and coverage here on Civic Media. Tim Walz and his wife, Gwen, married in 1994. They still live in Mankato, Minnesota, not entirely too far from here, right here in Wisconsin. And for nearly 20 years, they've been there before moving to St. Paul. They have their two children upon his election for governor. And again, a part of the Midwestern tradition, a part of the Minnesotan tradition, part of the American tradition, as we think about the candidacy going ahead on yard signs and in other ways in the days just ahead. Tim Walz, now the candidate for the vice presidency of the United States of America. Certainly all of us here on Civic Media, Brian and I included, will continue to be talking about this campaign and what it means. Certainly animated by those kinds of things that have been a part of Tim Walz's history. That includes, of course, a strong commitment to veterans affairs, a strong commitment to economics for small businesses, for large businesses as well, but small businesses as well that keep America strong. A strong advocacy for LGBT rights, for women's rights, for civil rights, for human rights. A strong advocacy for educators and teachers and the kinds of things that produce our future leaders, our future members of society. All of that wrapped up into Tim Walz as he goes forward now as the nominee for the Democratic position of vice president. In addition to that major news, of course, other major news coming out of various spots in our nation. Important to note that here on the Maggie Dawn Show as well. A couple of things having to do with those cases involving the other candidate for the presidency. His name is Donald Trump, as you may well know. He is also running for the presidency, and his name will also be on the ballot, I think, Brian, in November. And
perhaps.
Right?
Perhaps.
Right. It will be there along with a fellow named J.D. Vance, who is the vice presidential candidate on the Republican side of the ticket. We will anticipate, Brian, will we not, some debates between now and then between the presidential candidates. And we'll see how J.D. Vance does with Tim Walz. And we'll certainly follow that as well right here on Civic Media. All of that coming up in the weeks and months ahead.
I can't promise you, but I'm about 90% sure we're going to cover any debates that happen. Although it seems that most of the debate is whether they're going to have them or not.
That may well be. And again, wiser folks than I are making those judgment calls. Lots of strategy involved. Frankly, the debate's already underway, right? In many ways about all these major issues. So we'll keep on top of that as well. Along the way, whether there is the debate or not that Brian is talking about, we know that there are some things having to do with the cases. Yes, that's right. The cases, plural, involving the Republican nominee for the presidency. His name, again, is Donald Trump. We know that Donald Trump has already been convicted in a state criminal court in Manhattan, a case presided over by a judge named Juan Merchan. This is the case involving hush money, but actually more than that. It's involving false statements and an attempt, once again, to undermine the 2016 presidential election. Donald Trump, a convicted felon, 34 counts there of false statements in violation of New York law. Juan Merchan has now the responsibility as the presiding judge to sentence Donald Trump. Almost certainly a sentencing is going to happen before the election on November 5th of this year. Juan Merchan already postponing somewhat the sentencing was scheduled to take place this past summer.
He has already postponed that somewhat based upon the issuance by the Supreme Court of this major catastrophic decision that finds that a president is immune for certain acts of a criminal nature that he or she may engage in while the president of the United States of America. That so-called immunity decision now being rallied by the defense attorneys on behalf of Donald Trump in support of a petition in front of Juan Merchan to dismiss the case, get rid of this. Trial errors made as a result of now what is identified in the Supreme Court decision as things that should not come in because of these immunity. Juan Merchan taking that up and is going to be having a hearing sometime soon. He's postponed just today his decision on that until mid-September. And he is also now entertaining another motion that was recently filed, not surprisingly at all, by the defense attorneys there in Manhattan. And yet another motion for Juan Merchan to recuse himself, to take himself off the case based upon his conduct and his supervision of the trial. Juan Merchan just this day indicating that he's going to postpone his ruling on the immunity decision until September 16th, still has the September 18th date on his calendar for what he calls the imposition of sentence or other proceedings as appropriate. All of that indicating that Juan Merchan has every indication from his indications here that he is going to deny those motions and go ahead with sentencing. When we come back, more about the other trials involving Donald Trump here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
To explain or say how painful the hangover was today. In front of the toilet, hands and knees, trying to breathe in between the dry heaves. My baby made me some coffee.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Thank you for joining me in this, our second hour of our afternoon broadcast. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie Dawn today, and yes, also tomorrow and the day after that on Thursday as well, as we continue this arc of focusing upon some of the major issues happening in America, happening in the state of Wisconsin and beyond, talking right now about some events happening in the life of Donald Trump, including the decision by the Manhattan justice. His name is Juan Merchan. He is one presiding over that false statements case in Manhattan. He has said just today that he's going to postpone for a little while, not too far down the road, until September 16th, his decision on whether or not the decision of the Supreme Court on that immunity issue does have an impact or does not have an impact upon the trial. Almost certainly Juan Merchan creating a very good and meticulous appellate record. Very, very likely Juan Merchan is going to dismiss that notion that somehow the Supreme Court case requires him to get rid of, to dismiss, to vacate the jury verdict in that criminal prosecution that resulted in 34 counts finding Donald Trump, present candidate for the presidency, a convicted felon in the state of New York. Juan Merchan today saying, okay, I'll entertain your latest motion to have me recused from the case. He will certainly deny that one as well. And then we'll get back once again to the issue of immunity, almost certainly finding that it does not apply to this case. And then has said that the September 18th date remains on the calendar in that courtroom for the sentencing of Donald Trump based upon those convictions in a Manhattan courtroom. And that will be another significant date, not only in the campaign, but also in the history of America. We have never done that before. Never had before a situation where a former president, certainly a present campaign nominee for the presidency itself, is going to be sentenced in a criminal court for violations of the criminal law of the state of New York or of any state. That happening in Manhattan just today. Also on the East Coast, more news coming out of the other case that is currently on the docket of Tanya Chutkan. She is the federal district court judge. She is the federal district court judge in the District of Columbia who is presiding over that four-count indictment alleging election interference. This
unlike the case coming out of Fulton County in Georgia, this is the case brought by the U.S. Department of Justice, not a state entity, but the U.S. Department of Justice. Jack Smith is a special counsel. He has gotten from a grand jury there in the District of Columbia a four-count indictment alleging that Donald Trump engaged in acts that are a violation of the laws, of the criminal laws of the United States of America when it comes to interfering in the 2020 election. And in the wake, once again, not only of the return of that case having to do with immunity to the district court, but also another case involving Fisher and a question of whether or not one of the particular statutes under which Donald Trump has been charged, whether that sees the light of day beyond what the Supreme Court did. The Supreme Court basically is saying to Tanya Chutkan here, you make sense now of all the things that we have done when it comes to articulating this thing we've never heard about before in 240 years of history of our nation, a notion that a president is in fact immune from certain conduct, certain acts that would otherwise prompt you to say, all of us to say that no one is above the law, that we do not have kings in America. Supreme Court saying that no, indeed, there are some things that can in fact be shielded from prosecution, even in that federal case. Here, Tanya Chutkan, you figure it out. And so she's got those back on her docket now. Not an enviable task at all, as we have talked on other broadcasts of civic media. A huge task when it comes to figuring out what exactly the Supreme Court did and did not say when it comes to official and unofficial acts. All sorts of restrictions on the kinds of things that could be presented during the course of the trial. She's got to have all sorts of reviews of those issues. Presumably is going to be soliciting from the attorneys both their oral statements and their written statements about the kinds of things that she would like them to present to her about what she should do as this case goes forward. Almost certainly not going to be tried before the end of this calendar year. In a motion to dismiss the case following that Supreme Court's ruling, Donald Trump's attorneys once again saying that Donald Trump has immunity from this prosecution based upon the things the Supreme Court has said, based upon the things in that grand jury indictment against him. And Tanya Chutkan obviously indicating that she will take that up and decide that. She has said that she is now going to have a hearing on August 16th, just 10 days from now, August 16th in her courtroom to discuss the next steps in this criminal trial. And along the way, in anticipation of that, she's done something else that Donald Trump would not be happy about, and that is that she has denied a motion, much related to this, but different from the motion on the immunity issue. They brought a motion that alleged that this is all part of a vindictive political prosecution, the product not of a grand jury analysis, but nonetheless vindictive and purposeful in a partisan way. She has already denied that. She said that she has been provided with no meaningful evidence the former president is, in fact, the victim of some scheme, some conspiracy to prosecute him vindictively. That she has denied. And she has said, counsel, I want you in my courtroom on August 16th, just 10 days from right now. And we're going to talk about the next steps in this case, including presumably what the hearings will be like, what all this is going to look like going forward. And if in fact, at that time she makes some decisions, she will almost certainly issue some orders about the future and further conduct of this case when it comes to hearings and arguments, many, many things for discuss to figure out what is next in that prosecution after it has now been returned to her. That is to the courtroom of Tanya Chutkan, U.S. District Court Judge. Today, denying the motion based upon vindictive prosecution and ordering everybody back into court in just 10 days from now to decide on her behalf what is going to happen here. She is going to be the one deciding, presenting evidence and argument from the attorneys about what happens next in that all-important prosecution. An interesting day in the criminal prosecutions involving Donald Trump. We know that there are two others that are also out there. We know as well where those stand. We know that the other federal case dismissed by Judge Eileen Cannon, another district court judge, she is in South Florida. She has dismissed the Mar-a-Lago documents case. That's that case involving allegations that Donald Trump and two others not only engaged in conspiracy to obstruct justice, but also obstructed and improperly retained and used and possessed documents that they should not have had
in the wake of his presidency. That case now dismissed in the district court and now up on appeal. Jack Smith taking that decision up to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeal, the appellate court, over and above Eileen Cannon. They are plainly, they've already established a briefing schedule. They are plainly going to entertain that request to have Eileen Cannon's decision overturned. But in the meantime, no trial on that case at all. Nothing in the offing anytime soon. That is another case pending out there. And then, of course, we have the Georgia case. That is a state case. That is a state case also alleging election interference. That's the one being prosecuted by Fonnie Willis. And Scott McAfee is the state court judge there in Fulton County presiding over that case. He's done a lot of work in that case. He already dismissed six of the counts. Fonnie Willis has taken that up on appeal. And most famously, perhaps, the appellate court there in Georgia now reviewing the decision by Scott McAfee not to disqualify Fonnie Willis from the future prosecution of that case based upon a conflict of interest, finding that she engaged in some conduct that arguably presented an appearance of impropriety, prompting a co-member of the prosecution team to leave based upon the relationship they had. But Scott McAfee is saying you do not need the case entirely. Your office can continue to prosecute it. Donald Trump taking that decision up on appeal to the appeals court in Fulton County and beyond, and asking for the appeals court there to overturn that and send it back to Scott McAfee, presumably with directions to throw Fonnie Willis off the case. Unlikely that will happen based upon the record that Scott McAfee created, but that case too, now basically suspended. No chance for that case going to trial in any time soon, as the appeals court, the state appeals court there in that state criminal trial alleging election interference in the state of Georgia, those many, many counts, those many, many defendants, some of whom have already pled guilty there, but many cases, many counts there going to trial at some point down the road, presumably in months, maybe even in years, depending upon how long all of this takes. Again, the immediate one coming up is the sentencing of Donald Trump in September in Manhattan for his conviction for false statements in New York. And then also these other matters percolating up now, moving ahead in the federal district court in front of Tanya Chutkan. All of that, again, a part of our continued analysis and review here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Lots of things going on in the federal and state courts of our land, including things that do not involve our political candidates. And so let's talk about one of those. It's a major thing that happened, a major case coming out of a federal court just yesterday, just August 5th of 2024, having to do with monopolies. Monopolies and Google. That's right. A major case decided just yesterday by a judge named Amit Mehta, M-E-H-T-A. He is also in the district court for the District of Columbia. And so structurally, if you think about this, Tanya Chutkan is a district court judge in the District of Columbia, and so is Judge Amit Mehta. He is in the same branch, if you will, of that court. He is a trial court judge in the federal system. His cases are also appealed to the District of Columbia Circuit Court when those cases are ready for judgment and are subject to appeal by the parties. Judge Amit Mehta just yesterday did something huge, just yesterday in a 277-page ruling. Now, I know Brian has already read that ruling because that's the kind of guy he is.
I did get a briefing on it this morning.
Yes.
So I have looked at it. How do you break up Google?
You're up to date on this already, right? And that's all about what the judge did. And Brian will plainly weigh in also on that all-important issue, what you do next. But for now, the judge has indicated that Google abused a monopoly over the search business. The Justice Department, the U.S. Department of Justice, once again, through the Attorney General and through the Antitrust Division, particularly an Assistant Attorney General on the case, has brought this lawsuit a long, long time ago, suing Google, accusing it of illegally cementing its dominance in part by paying other companies like Apple and Samsung billions of dollars every year to have Google automatically handle search queries on their smartphones and their web browsers. There's a lot to unpack there. And Judge Mehta just yesterday said Google is a monopolist and it has in fact acted as one to maintain its monopoly. Google acted illegally to maintain a monopoly in this online search, a federal district court judge says just yesterday. It is a major, it's a landmark decision. It strikes candidly at the power of these tech giants in the modern internet era, and it may fundamentally alter the way that they do business and that we understand all of that. Google's search dominance, the first antitrust decision in the modern era in this area. We're going to talk more about all of that as we continue here on the Maggie Dawn Show, talking about monopolies in America and what Google faces in the times just ahead.
Sometimes you gotta give in to win. I love the days when it shines. Whoa, let it shine. Sunshine, sunshine, it's fine. I feel it in my skin, warming up my mind. Sometimes you gotta give in to win. I love the days when it shines. Whoa, let it shine.
Whoa, let it shine.
Whoa, let it shine.
Whoa, let it shine.
Whoa, let it.
Do you believe he lied to the Justice Department?
Do I personally believe it? Yes, I do.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
I hear voices, I see smiles to match them. Good times, and you can feel it in the fashion. Even though the heat cooks up the action, the streets still got butterflies, enough kids to catch them. Riding my bike around these lakes, man. Feeling like I finally figured out my escape plan. Take it all in, the day started off all wrong. But somehow now that hangover is all gone. Ain't nothing like the sound of the leaves when the breeze penetrates these south side trees. Leaning up against one, watching the vibe, forgetting.
Wisconsin pines collaborate with the day. Glow vibes, you know. Touristic made a travel guide. It's chill.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel. In this last segment of our broadcast this afternoon, talking all about this major, major decision coming out of a federal district court judge courtroom just yesterday, finding that Google is a monopolist, as Judge Amit Mehta wrote, and finding that he's got to make some decisions in the future here about the remedies that come from this major decision. The Assistant Attorney General, his name is Jonathan Cantor, for the Antitrust Division inside the Department of Justice, one of the many sort of subunits inside the Department of Justice, said this. He said, this landmark decision holds Google accountable. He said it paves the path for innovation for generations to come and protects access to information for all Americans. The decision, obviously not one well received by Apple itself. The company itself spends billions of dollars annually during the course of the trial, a lot of this presented, to be the automatic search engine on browsers like Apple's Safari, Mozilla's Firefox. Google paid Apple about $18 billion for being the designated default in 2020 alone. During the trial, the representatives of Google itself pushed back upon this notion. They said that Google was providing a better service for their customers. Said users choose to search on Google because they find it useful, and the company has continued to invest to make it better. All of that advocated by the company's lawyers and in testimony. The attorneys provided testimony and also provided arguments saying Google is winning because it's better, expressly contrary, of course, to what the Department of Justice was maintaining at the time, the government arguing once again that by paying billions of dollars to be the automatic search engine on consumer devices, Google had denied its competitors, thus the monopolistic description, denying the competitors the opportunity to build to scale the required amounts to compete with its own search engine. Instead, according to the government, Google collected more data about consumers that it used to make its search engine better and more dominant. And that's exactly what Judge Mehta found. He said for more than a decade, those agreements have given Google access to scale that its rivals cannot match. Judge Mehta ruled that Google's monopoly allowed it to inflate the prices for some search ads. And that, in turn, he found, gave the company more money to pay for its search engine to get prime placement. Unconstrained price increases have fueled Google's dramatic revenue growth, he wrote. and allowed it to maintain high and remarkably stable operating profits. That's all coming from the pen of Judge Mehta. Now, he did, in fairness, rule in Google's favor on some of the lesser claims. Google offers advertisers many kinds of tools, many different devices, including one that they may use to manage advertising on different kinds of search engines. And the state attorneys general argued during the trial that Google had illegally excluded the search engine Bing from aspects of those tools. But Judge Mehta, on that point, on that argument, ruled against their claim. And so, not completely a balanced disposition. The big one, of course, finding that Google is indeed a monopolistic entity. But, of course, a huge issue having to do not only with the present status of Google, but what may happen down the road. Brian, of course, is going to be enlisted to try to craft a result from all of this. That's the assignment that he has others have.
Easy. Just, you know, easily break up Google. That's just so easy to do. You just cut it in half. Brian, and then half the country gets Google, the other half gets Moogle, right? And it's the same.
And Brian, if there's anybody who can do it, I think you can. I think we all trust you. And I think Judge Mehta, if only he knew about your expertise, would reach out to you. But that is the assignment that is now before the court to figure out, okay, you've made this determination, kind of a declaratory judgment, that in fact Google is a monopolist. You have violated the civil law. I very quickly want to add that. This is not a criminal case, but you're a monopoly. You have done these kinds of things to change the market, to skew the market in your favor, contrary to the competitive and anti-competitive laws that are out there. And so now the question is, what do you do next?
Yeah, but Jim, like, this is like when they broke up Standard Oil, that's like commodities. It's an actual physical thing you can do. This is largely online, and most of the people who will be doing the divvying up have no idea how the thing works in the first place.
Exactly.
So how do you do that?
How do you do that? And so just like all these district court judges in District of Columbia have some of the most unenviable tasks imaginable, right? You've got Tanya Chutkan, who now has got to sort through this catastrophic thing that the Supreme Court gave to her and try to figure out what is and is not there. And Judge Mehta, now in the wake of his decision that monopolies, Google is among those monopolies out there, now got to figure out, how do you do this technologically? What is next?
Luckily, the judges are now free from any constraints of having to rely on any of the experts for any of their testimony. They can just make the ruling without any expertise themselves. So they at least have a little bit easier way of getting there.
Absolutely. Now we've got, and you know, Brian is on top of all these things, as all the listeners of the Maggie Dawn Show as well. We know from Loper Bright Enterprises that the Supreme Court conferred upon all the judges just that right. You don't have to rely upon experts anymore. In fact, courts know better. Courts know better than the technologists out there, the scientists, the medical people, the engineers, all those folks. And
boy,
for that
I wish
reason,
this was sarcasm, but right? It is not.
It is, unfortunately, it is not the case. And again, as we've talked before, that Loper Bright Enterprises changed government, changed the way that we do things in America, gave more power to courts. And that happened on June 28th, and in July 1, we amended the Constitution. We basically undermined the Constitution by establishing immunity, all of those kinds of things coming out of our Supreme Court. And that's the real reason why all this is an appropriate matter for discussion here on the Maggie Dawn Show and other broadcasts of civic media, because they do have implications, not just for kind of cosmic issues related to the future of our nation. That's what Maggie's all about this afternoon, starting in just a few minutes or so on the campus of our state's capital, but also practical things. Like, how do we figure out if there is in fact a monopoly in the thing called Google? How do we figure out what has to happen next? That is no small thing. Necessarily have to rely upon the experts, the people who know, and not just the technological people, not just the people who know how to fix my computer, but also the economics out there. That is also a major portion of all of this coming out of these decisions of the Federal District Court in the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C. We'll continue to monitor all of that as well. The Antitrust Division, of course, a major, major victory for it. And now it, too, has got to represent through the auspices of current Assistant Attorney General Jonathan Cantor. That is his name. You'll hear more about him in the near future as all of this goes forward. Delighted to have you with me today. I'm going to be back again tomorrow here on the Maggie Dawn Show as we continue this discussion of all things related to America, its future, and the republic to which we all ascribe allegiance as we go forward here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.